KPCA-LP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. Welcome to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, here co-hosting with Janice Peter Thompson and Jason Davies. Good morning, kids.
Good morning.
Yeah. Another Friday.
Another Friday. We made it.
Beautiful week.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The rain seems like it's stopping. We might have some beautiful weather. Looking forward to it. Well,
I've seen those clouds hanging out over Sonoma Mountain.
Yeah.
I hope you didn't just jinx us.
No, absolutely not. I like the rain. I don't mind the rain. It's great for the garden.
Well,
but it's
things green.
Yeah, I was in Carson City last weekend at a great place to go. Fandango, you know, you can go there for $2.99 breakfast. Yummy.
You have to play a slot machine or something?
No, in the Pearls, I didn't win in the slot machines either. I'm not much of a gambler.
Well, how about gambling for breakfast?
No, I mean,
you don't know what you're going to get. It could be eggs, it could be bacon.
Right, it's true. But all of a sudden, you know, the dog, of course, had to go out in the middle of the night. And so I went to the door to let her out, and it was just storming. And, you know, it was one of those when the trees were whipping. And, you know, so.
In May, exactly.
But I just want to comment on that it's unfortunate that Petaluma Mental Health Clinic is on the chopping block. Hmm. And this is the county is pulling back on their funding. And I think this is really unfortunate because mental health is a real problem, not just in Petaluma and Sonoma County, but it's a, you know, certainly a California nationwide problem. And I'm disappointed that our supervisor is making that part of the chopping block. It's something important for our community, and it really helps people. The other thing is the outrage after Petaluma yearbook photo show apparent racist gestures. Seems like here we go again. Mm. Last year it was Lulabelle Seitz, a valedictorian, that they decided to cut the mic. And that was national, actually world news. And this has already gotten national news. So Petaluma every year seems to make the national or world news on something with our school district. So, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I was a little bit surprised. I had never really been on the Facebook page of the Argus Courier, and the comments by other people about the people that went to the school board and commented on this, they were pretty vicious. And so I always say, welcome to Petaluma. There's another side to this town that people don't really know. Yeah. And so... So, that's it, and I'm sure that...
I have to say, I didn't know what the circle game was. I'd never heard of circle game.
Well, I'd never heard of it really before, and...
It's a Joni Mitchell song. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Good one. I like that. That's true.
So, I don't play unless you do open tuning, then, for those guitar players.
So, we'll just see what happens with this, but it's... yeah.
In the meantime, let's welcome our guest, Mark Landman. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Cindy. Thank you very much for inviting me to be here. Pleasure to be down in Petaluma.
We're glad to have you here. And if our listeners aren't aware, Mark sits on the Cotati City Council. How long have you been on there?
I have been on the Cotati City Council about a decade now.
Yeah, it's been a while. And you've been mayor a couple of times.
I have indeed had the honor of being mayor several times.
Yes.
So you have a rotating mayor, not an elected mayor?
We do. We play very nicely in Cotati. I am very happy to say that all of our colleagues... All of us have
had a turn.
Had a turn, yeah. There's not anybody that doesn't deserve the opportunity to have a chance to serve and do this job. We all have different strengths, and we all have our different weaknesses, but there's not one of us that hasn't done it and shown in some individual way. So we've managed that. I mean, it is still a vote every time. It's never a guarantee, as we know. But we've tried to have a collegial council because we think there's value in trying to do that.
I'm still watching Santa Rosa to see if they're ever going to have a collegial moment up there.
Well, these things
it's
wax
getting
and
better.
Wane.
They're getting better.
Yeah, these things wax and wane, and we all do the best we can. You know, because politics is a sport that can easily lead to strong feelings.
Yes.
So it's, but that is the whole name of the game, to try to avoid that. Because if you can, that's where the benefits come.
Exactly.
Where do you sit in terms, I mean, is there like a council majority and you're kind of on it, or is it too scattered and difficult to...
So this is the voice of Petaluma looking through the lens of Petaluma in other places. And actually, no, it's completely different for us. Our quote-unquote majority is completely fluid because it will vary all the time. One time it's this, one time it's that. Usually, most things seem very common sense, and we're usually in consensus. What usually happens sometimes, if there's a difference of opinion, is it means we talk for another 45 minutes, and we'll say, well, wait a minute, I don't like this. What about this? And, you know, it's funny. I watch, we all come into meetings thinking we know what the answer is to something. We may not predicate our vote, but we think we know where it's going to go. And we think we've thought it through clearly. And then somebody brings something up in a turn, and we go, oh, here we go. I won't get home till 11:30. Oh, God. But you know what? By the time you finish that discussion, you realize, well, I hadn't thought of every angle.
Sure.
Sometimes something comes up that changes your view. Other times, having had that discussion, even if no, that ultimately doesn't change it, and the majority wants to go a certain way, you have a confidence that you've looked at this from every angle you can for the public, which we're supposed to do. So it works.
That's good.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
That's the way it should work.
Yeah. And now your being on the city council has also allowed you, if you will, to be on, sit on other agencies here within the county. So you want to tell us what it is you're doing aside from your work at Cotati?
I have had a variety of assignments in this county, and they've all been interesting and good ones. I am currently the chair of Sonoma Clean Power. This is my second time, actually, as chair of the board of directors for Sonoma Clean Power. I'm a founding board member there. I'm currently the chair for the Regional Climate Protection Authority and the Sonoma County Transportation Authority. I previously served as chair for the Russian River Watershed Association for a few years and also served as chair for a few years as of the Sonoma County Mayors and Council Members Legislative Committee. And lastly, I am an alternate city member for my favorite short name in all politics, LAFCO, the Local Area Formation Commission. I love that, LAFCO. It's actually a very exciting assignment, a really important one. Mm-hmm. So those are the things I've been able to represent Cotati, but not just Cotati, really the whole county. And this is the interesting thing about being a city council member. People come to you and say, oh, would you like to run for higher office? And all politicians love
it. I was just going to ask you that.
Oh, they always think about it. Anybody just says they don't, they're not telling you the truth. But what's interesting, as a council member, once you really learn how things work, once you begin to develop people who know you and trust you, you learn where all the strings are to try and make good things happen. You can work on a regional level and do things, even from a small city. That's to me one of the interesting things of the job. You can hopefully be able to be done with this at a certain point and say, "Hey, I've had some consequence. We've made some things happen for the better in this community." So that's the value of these types of assignments. Sonoma Clean Power probably being one of the biggest example. That was and is a huge success for this county and for this state.
So you have two more years in your term, or?
Let's see. I think I've got about 3.5.
Okay.
It speeds up, I think, towards the end a little bit, it feels like. I just got through my third reelection cycle and completed that. So this conceivably might be my last term. It would seem
this
right.
This is where I was going. So you're at this point, you have no plans to do anything in politics beyond?
Well, let's take a look at that. First of all, I'm 65. I will be pushing 70 by the time I've done. That will be 14 years in office. And I was just reelected with, let's see, we had 3 people running for 2 seats. I got 47.2% of the vote, which translates to 94.4% of Cotatians selecting me to be on the city council.
Yeah.
There's something for the saying of quit while you're ahead that sticks with me.
Or build with that success.
Well, you could say that, too. But it is
supervisor.
And I thought we were friends. Why would you wish that on me?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Maybe you do better than our... Oh, sorry.
On the flip side, you do have family as well.
Well, there is that, too.
I like to see you at home more
often. We start thinking, so here's the interesting thing about life. As you get older, time passes quicker. Yeah. Our biological clock actually slows down, so it appears time goes quicker. And I rather enjoy that. It doesn't bother me until I realize, I'm 65. What do the insurance tables say? How long I'll last? How quick are years going? And it's going to speed up. That's kind of a worrisome thought. So you do have to be thoughtful about where you're going to invest that time. And having put 14 years in, I'm not saying 100% this would be the end of my political life if the right opportunity arose. Who knows?
Sure.
There's nothing more amusing to the universe than people who make plans. You know, because it just never goes that way.
Yeah, life is what happens when you're making plans.
Yes. Isn't that true? That's
good. Well, sometimes I think it's important to know when to step down, like you said earlier.
Well, yeah, go out on top, too.
Yeah,
there's something
exactly.
to be said for that. I've seen colleagues that, for sometimes reasons not of their under their control, haven't been able to do that. And it's a difficult place.
Yeah.
That's very true. So I'd like to talk about the CASA agreement.
I'd like to jump into something. So something simple, easy to grasp, very positive. I like that.
Let's first explain what CASA means.
Exactly, and plus the Prop 30 that was just put on the shelf with...
In theory,
with McGuire and Wiener?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And so, tell us about this.
All right.
What does CASA stand for?
Yeah.
Well, actually, you think it's an acronym, but it's really not. It's, I guess, basically what was going on was that MTC and ABAG working together were taking a look at the nexus between transportation and housing, how to deal with what they feel is an emergency in housing, and it is certainly knowledgeable to anybody that the cost of housing is expensive in this county and throughout this state. But let me just sum it up rather than spending minutes and minutes trying to get into the minutia what this is. What it was put for this is something would help solve the high cost of housing in the state, but I really found it was more of a wish list for developers. And I felt in my final analysis, at least, the end result would be a lot more market rate and above market rate housing. Remember, up to 120% of average median income or area median income. That's not housing that's going to help working people with their renting or even, heaven forbid, purchasing. What it is going to do certainly is be a wonderful package for developers and certainly help with, Southern Bay Area's problems with workforce housing perhaps a little bit. But what does it do to Sonoma County? So that's number one. I think number two, the other thing we look at, it was rigidly inflexible. Now, just for the moment, I don't completely buy in saying that there is a housing emergency. Granted, there's a huge problem with housing costs, but emergency connotates this is something that's just come out of the blue and we're surprised by it.
Right.
I'm looking in the room here, and I'm guessing most of our listeners, we've grown up watching this happen in slow motion. We've seen the gradual hollowing out of the working middle class and the huge transfer of revenue from that huge sector of the economy up to... Now, I don't want to sound like a cliche, but a 1 or 2% because we see it.
Yeah.
There was an interesting thing about CEO pay in the Sunday paper. I should have clipped and brought in because it's just ridiculous amounts.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, it's no surprise that housing is expensive. But looking at this, the rigid little flexibleness, if we even agree with that argument that generating a lot of market rate housing might help, then... If you come up with a standard of saying, for example, in San Francisco, Oakland, or San Jose, requiring 7-story buildings next to transit and train stations is okay. This will help us. Local government can't do anything about it. Local citizens can't say no. Maybe that works for those communities. I haven't really looked deeply into it with their size. Perhaps that's not a bad thing, because I do agree with the idea of increased density by transit, businesses, and jobs. It makes sense. But if that same standard works for San Francisco or Oakland, how could that possibly work in Petaluma or Cotati? So this was the problem. It was not scalable, and there was no willingness to make it scalable. And lastly, its inception was flawed from the beginning. The political process was not done in a way that engendered a lot of confidence, support, or smiles among the rest of us. This was something that all of us had our eyes on. We knew this could be problematic. But it was essentially just subcommittees. It was described as just a scaffold. There was really nothing to grapple with yet. And naively, we assumed when it came in front of us, that would be the time for discussion. But what happened last December, and everybody should know, December is a time when all local government goes dark. We're not doing business. We're not talking. We're not able to take action.
And that's when action happens.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, within just about 2 weeks, I think, Janice, this went from... Nothing. It's just subcommittees. It's just a scaffold to a signed agreement bypassed of all of us and went right to the legislature. And so that's like starting an arm wrestling contest with your arm an inch above the table. Mm-hmm. Kind of hard to win that one. And that was no accident.
I want to play the devil's advocate on this.
Please do.
Because you and I, we've talked about this. I believe when the public voted for SMART, I don't think that they realized that what we voted for was high density around rail stations.
No.
And so in Petaluma, I'll use this as the example. I'm going to talk about the downtown station that is already up and going, and then we have the Corona station that is still in flex if we're going to have a station there. And what I realize in the downtown, there's something called the stationary plan that was done in 2009. And from 2009 to 2019, a lot has changed. You know, and the SMART train has been the bigger change. And in order for that to be successful, you have to have density around rail stations. So the way that the stationary plan is, buildings can go up to 5 stories, and that's the max they can go up to. Okay, I understand the 7 stories. You know, I'm looking at this differently than when you and I talked about this, only because this last week at the Planning Commission, this Haystack project was approved.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 4-story instead of at least 5 stories next to a rail station. I think plans that started in 2019, we need to always revisit a plan and not just say, well, this is what the plan is, because as things have changed, such as SMART. And so we have a 4-story building when it really should have been 5-story.
Mm-hmm.
But the developer is always telling us what we can and we can't do.
That famous word, it doesn't pencil out.
It never pencils out. That's what they all say. And I've been hearing this, you know, for years in this city.
Which is another game of trust me poker, because you don't really see the numbers and know how it truly pencils.
Right.
I mean, there's probably some truth sometimes to that, but who knows?
But with the CASA agreement, what I'm questioning is, as an example, D Street in Petaluma.
Mm-hmm.
We have all these PG&E lines that are above ground. Those really should have been, when the city had redevelopment money in the day, those should have been all underground so you were prepared. Because even 20 years ago, we knew what was going to happen in the downtown,
mm-hmm.
even though the public may not have known. But people in government knew that was the direction we were going to be going. And I have to say, it went at a snail's pace. And so now we have a road that is insufficient. We're approving a 4-story instead of a 5-story. And I went to the meeting, and I didn't feel as though I got answers what's going to happen as far as the transportation part.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go over to to Corona Road. When the city updated the general plan, none of the rail crossings were widened. And I'm sure this is with other cities, too. I'm not really sure. But Petaluma did not widen any of the rail crossings. So we have in 1954, or actually before 1954, because the train was going through the Corona crossing before then, narrow. It was not upgraded for bikes or pedestrians. We have the Corona overcrossing that is not upgraded for bikes, pedestrians, or cars. And so I guess I'm looking at this at the ACOSTA agreement.
All right.
Would money have come from that to actually prepare cities or backfill to make the changes for, like, the PG&E lines, safe sidewalks, safe biking in communities, and the same thing goes over with Corona. And I feel like Sonoma County Transportation Authority is not really looking at the bigger picture when we're looking at transportation and safety.
Right.
Because I'm disappointed that Corona is not even up for upgrading. It was built in 1954. So how would the CASA agreement, would that have backfilled for a community? I understand the 7 stories because I had problems with height in certain areas. But now I've kind of reversed a little bit because I want to know how the cities would have gotten money instead of through redevelopment money. Would this have been a means to get money so cities could actually underground PG&E lines, widen rail crossings, and make things safer and more mobility? And at the Corona station, there is a housing development that is a single-family housing development right by the station with no access to the station, public walking access.
Right.
And it seems like our city's going backwards a little bit by approving these types of projects, knowing that SMART is here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious about CASA, and was there funding mechanisms in there to actually help cities facilitate better movement?
Well, the answer is yes and no. Yes, there might have been, but would you have been happy, or would it have done what you would have wanted? That's a separate question. So just taking a look at the big picture, a significant amount of money was planned to be taken through various ways of funding, various taxes, fees, charges. It would have been then collected through a large agency and then sent back. So whatever came out, for example, Sonoma County, and let's just say, for example, the city of Petaluma, whatever you sent in the way of tax dollars, let's just say you're from your economy, because that's really the best description. However you pay it, it comes out of Petaluma citizens' economies. You had only seen 75% of it come back. That was the only guarantee we got. So that's
where did the 25% go?
That's invested in other areas all throughout all the nine Bay Area counties. Now, having said that, this means the other flip side of that is, oh, well, if we come up with a good project, then we could get money from those other nine Bay Area counties. Yes, conceivably you could, but then the way the money, it wasn't really unclear how it would be distributed other than a rough idea of, well, it would probably go maybe to the county and then be distributed, letting them decide who would get it.
What
sort of projects would actually meet. So, for example, in your indication, building something that's already been agreed to, a five-story building, and making it more walkable, livable, and making fitness downtown, if you could have got money for that, that's a great thing. If this is money that would have then come to instead force a seven-story structure. So that was the conundrum. I want to be clear, because I probably sound like my grandfather arguing on the lawn when it comes to CASA. Let me pull my pants up just a little higher here, get in the mode. We get, and I personally get, and have always been supportive of increased density. As I mentioned earlier, we have specific plans just in my little town for our downtown, and by our train station that specifically call for higher levels of density than Little Cotati normally has, particularly our downtown. We're looking at a hotel potentially coming in the northern part of it, something what they like to call nowadays a boutique hotel, I understand, kind of like Guildford.
Yeah.
It is it's 50 feet high. That is five stories. That is more than people are used to in Cotati. But it's been zoned that way a long time, in the same way over by our smart station. And we always have some flexibility. The classic thing where it doesn't quite pencil out, we want to do this, there's always some room, probably, to adjust these things. I think we're not inflexible. But when you go from a standard density of three or four stories around our smart station and drag it up to five at minimum with no recourse, and let's be realistic, seven through going to the state regarding it, that's too large a jump.
Well, that was the big bridge.
So that's the given.
Exactly.
So there's the problem. And I think you hit the key thing, the problem with all these things, housing, because that's the key part of it, housing too, it's the funding. Mm-hmm. Where did the funding come from? Because redevelopment, whatever flaws it had, did allow us to do this. Mm-hmm. People want us to build affordable housing. We're in the middle of our eight-year RENA number cycle. For everyone who's listening and really tired of acronyms, that's regional housing allocation numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They come from the state. They're somewhat magical numbers, but they give us a list of numbers for market rate, moderate, low-cost, and very low-cost housing. Usually the very low-cost housing is the larger one. It's, like for us, twice the size of our other ones. And you have 8 years, in theory, to fill those. We're sitting right now, in the old days, we could have done that pretty easily. Because where's the money come from to finance that lower cost housing? Without redevelopment, the only way to do it is to try and get it out of that not penciling out fund that developers have, out of their profit margin. And at a certain point, no matter how good you are at negotiation, reality sets in, there's only so much profit in these developments, and they won't build if it's not there. And that's why the incentive, the sweetener, the carrot of redevelopment was so powerful. So to a degree, CASA might have helped with it, but I don't think it was a satisfactory way to go about it.
Well, I like to look 20 years out. And when the downtown was being, the redevelopment of the downtown, the theater district is three stories. And today, we really know it should have been five stories because there are a lot of vacancies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those vacancies is because you do not have enough people buying goods. And as we continue to grow out closer to the rail station, that project will even be more successful because a lot of the vacancies, I believe, will be filled because you will have people maneuvering around those areas.
A certain density makes a
big difference. And so now we're looking at a five-story hotel downtown with no parking, and I feel like it's going to stick out like a sore thumb.
Which one are you talking about?
On B Street.
B
and the Boulevard. There's no parking. so it's off-site parking, mm-hmm. and the off-site parking is probably not in perpetuity. And so you have zero parking.
Now, how could that be a problem?
Yeah, right, exactly. So you have zero parking. And so I want to play the devil's advocate, but I have people on the city council that don't have a problem with that project.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they weren't pushing for five stories for by a rail station, and they don't have problems with the four stories.
So yeah.
And so then you look at redevelopment or how Costa could have come in with this. Could one of those stories going up to five story have been for lower income people, which are people that are basically our neighbors,
mm-hmm.
and they just are, you know, getting into the market,
sure.
and they need a place to live. And so I feel like we have lost a huge opportunity for an infusion of money to help to make it that these projects have low income housing in them, a true mixed use project.
Mm-hmm.
And it's concerning. And so you know, because you and I, we talked early on about this concept.
Once or twice, I think. Yes,
at least once or twice. And because of this project, I'm really kind of coming around mm-hmm. to a different viewpoint. The seven stories, it seems as though the cities in certain areas should have had more of a say. If it shouldn't have said it mandatory. But
yes.
we had talked about in Santa Rosa how they had kind of a joint venture mm-hmm. financial agreement.
The red.
That is not within the county of Sonoma, but only in Santa Rosa. Is that, and that was going to maybe be
mm-hmm.
more countywide, which was the same as the CASA and the overarching group that was going to manage that money. So we're still, are we going to do it locally to make these things happen, or are we going to do it at the state level to make projects happen with more low income housing available instead of saying it doesn't pencil out? How are we going to infuse that money? And I feel like with CASA, we lost an opportunity maybe to infuse money into projects.
Well, I'm pretty clear. I think there will be some sort of successor to redevelopment. We can't call it that because the governor will explode if we say that.
Petaluma gave away a lot of redevelopment money, tens of millions of dollars.
Yes, we're in the same way.
Excuse me, language.
Well, there were problems with it. So we will see some sort of successor with the interest in pushing towards housing. That's going to happen. And in terms of the red, those are the things we look at. In terms of regionalism, heck yeah, that's the best way to handle problems. But the important thing to remember, and this I think was one of the failings of this system from the nine barrier counties, for regionalism to work, you do have to have some shared goals, concerns, and values and agreements as to how you will do things. And if you don't start with those, then you can't achieve
anything.
Well,
and just so the public knows, this was not just about the nine barrier counties. This was a statewide.
And that is indeed what it morphed into.
Is what it ended up morphing into. So it was not just about our county. So it was a statewide issue, which we have so many problems throughout the state for housing. And it's just, I mean, it's just too bad that it went the direction it did. And at the last minute, it was passed without at least some provisions in there for cities like Petaluma and Cotati to maybe have their densities different.
Had it been done right, yes, because we've already talked about Cotati, our flexibility and ability to die. I look at your downtown, you talk about a new hotel potentially standing out, yet had that been feathered in closer to your train station between that and the downtown, which arguably maybe could have been more than three stories, who knows. That could have worked very well for
That's
this community and been very successful in giving you that type of numbers that you need to make a downtown more vibrant and successful financially.
Right. And that's why I say look 20 years out, because a theater district of five stories, we would have been in a different economics today because you would have had more people living in there. But it really tied into everything ties in.
Mm-hmm.
All the other the future development is going to make this development more profitable.
Yeah. However, just having said that,
and the community,
just as somebody used to live for 10 years in Petaluma, my wife and I regularly come down here, I will admit, it's probably one of our favorite cities to come spend an afternoon in your downtown, get woken up over at Acre, and then who knows where the day goes.
Yeah.
we like your downtown. That was a significant, and perhaps was it everything that it could have been? Did it fully assess every potential that might come in the future? No project does, but
right.
I still look at it as a huge success.
Overall,
and
I think so.
And I do know it's a success.
And now from
but
what
I'm
you've
just saying
from that,
we need to look 20 years out, and we're doing a four-story building. And from 2009 to 2019, that stationary plan should have been revisited, and the height limit should have been a mandatory, not just, well, we can go ahead and do two, three, or four, or whatever we want to do, but not to the maximum. And that's where I feel as though...
Yeah, interesting discussion.
In 10 years after that's built, people are going to say, boy, we should have had an
I'm always right. hesitant as a council member from another place to come in and weigh in on something I
yeah.
don't know about for another city, but it would be interesting to see why you weren't able to go there. But that's for the future.
Right. I mean, it's just... But the thing is, the future's here.
So I'd like to talk about a different topic, if we can.
Yeah.
And that is that Cotati has something very special that we don't. And that is...
Is that a statue of an accordion player?
Well, that is one thing.
That didn't take long to come out.
but yeah, I mean, you guys have dispensaries.
We do, indeed.
Where people can legally purchase marijuana. I don't know how many you have. How many? I know there's one.
We have one, several other in the offing. We were the very first dispensary that legally opened for sales in this county. Something as mayor, when that happened, I took a small amount of pride in. I thought that was unique. You know, the future comes upon us, and the best way to make it work for you is to find out how to make it work for you, not just to close your eyes to it.
So we hear all the horror stories, the reasons for the objections. How has it gone so far? Has it been a safe environment?
We've had absolutely no problems, and historically... Because this goes back not just with this goes back a decade, Jason, to when we started with medical usage.
Mm-hmm.
And I was brand new in the council. I came in right at the tail end of that. And indeed, you thought we were bringing in the Joseph Mengele School for Medical Practices. There was a lot of consternation. And I, you know, some of it I got. It's something new. It's something different. At the same time, when we had a young mother with a couple of kids, single mother, who was fighting cancer,
mm-hmm.
and tearfully... made a plea, could you please make it able for me to get this, because it's the only way the only medicine I can take that allows me to work, and I need to be able to work. It's that sold me. So that particular dispensary, Mercy Wellness, has been an incredibly good business partner in this community. They've worked well with the community, their partners, everything we've asked, they've done, and more. And so with that track record of being a smart part of the community and being completely problem-free,
No break-ins, no robberies.
No.
Because the concern is with all that cash, because they're not taking credit cards, that thieves know that and that they become a target. This is one of the arguments I hear sometimes from council members against approving dispensaries.
Well, it probably sounds like a strong argument for some sort of statewide banking system to actually allow that, but that's another topic.
I know.
It's amazing how well this industry has done and how far it's come and how motivated the people behind it are to be able to do everything they've done, having to work on a cash-only basis.
Yeah.
But no, we've had no problems with that to this point. And I'm going to say, again, I hope you didn't jinx us. I'm going to knock on wood here.
Yeah.
But it's actually been problem-free.
And so any downsides? Have you been able to measure whether there's been an increase in use among minors? Has there been more car accidents? You know, is any of this stuff... Actually, has it been measured? Is anyone looking at it?
That's the type of measurement you're probably going to look for more regional or certainly statewide data on. It's really hard for a city of our size to collect and do. In terms of traffic accidents.
I mean, are there more DUIs because of it? Or
we've seen nothing anomalous jump out in those sort of legal aspects since this. It's been essentially just another part of the community that had some initial concern, like so many things in public life. When there's something new, people are concerned because we're creatures of habit. We don't like change. But then as soon as we get used to it, it's fine.
So since it became legal, not just for medical use, but recreational use for adults, have you seen an uptick in the tax revenue?
So
a significant one?
We're seeing roughly about $1,330,000 in revenue for the city from that one dispensary.
That's just the tax for the city.
It's not really. It comes off their profit. It's not really a tax that goes on the sale per se. What I would point out is we've approached it differently than the state.
Okay.
You know, the state comes in taking 25% off. I think it's 25% off the top, which is a huge amount. They're looking at this, I guess, like a cash cow. And we look at this much like Santa Rosa did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a new business. This is something that potentially can fit in Sonoma County.
Yeah.
Like we talked about earlier, Sonoma County, we're about good wine, good food, good craft beer now. Same thing can happen with cannabis. It can change from being something that's kind of an outlier to something mainstream and upstream, as a matter of fact. And so we decided, rather than try and get as much money possible out of them, which would have been very helpful for our community,
sure,
our citizens, certainly, we always wanted to diversify our revenue sources. We had a The electorate voted, gave us an initiative that allows us to charge up to 8% of their profits. But at this point, we're only charging 3%. And we locked that in for 3 years because we wanted to give this industry a sense of certainty, at least on some costs, for a few years to help them get started, because it's been very tumultuous for them. I think Santa Rosa locked in for 2 years. So that was the thought in doing that, Jason.
So if I go to Mercy Wellness, for example,
please do spend your tax dollars in Qatar.
And we do.
Is it a 25% tax and then on top of that a 3% tax, or is it a separate?
You probably would want to ask somebody who's much better at exactly how these numbers
work.
But yes, the state takes their cut off the top, and then so we've come into cities. It's like, wow, this is a revenue stream that's important, but we're kind of trying to hold off on that.
So is Sebastopol similar, a relatively small tax?
I'm not sure exactly what they're doing there.
Okay.
We followed, because I will give Santa Rosa credit. Their staff did a lot of work for them, pretty groundbreaking, went in a direction you wouldn't expect from a big city, which you don't expect to see change course so quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were impressed with that. They seemed to have the same idea of how to approach it that we did. So we've mirrored much of what they've done in that, other than just adding a little extra time trying to, one, be competitive, and two, recognizing 2 years probably wasn't enough given everything that's going on in the cannabis industry right now for that to actually shake out and give these businesses a chance to...
No pun intended.
Exactly. Get the shake out. Because what we really want to make sure, actually, is we're looking for the best partners we can. We want people to want to come and be a long-term business in the community and be a positive presence.
So you're saying what the tax is, your tax, you added 3% on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, but the state still gets their cut.
Yes.
But with that 3% that you added on, you're bringing how much money into your city?
Mm-hmm. 330. We think
$330,000.
Right. And remember,
that's a lot of money.
$250,000.
That's a lot of money.
We have the ability.
That could fill potholes.
Actually, about a third. And we have the ability to go up to a full 8%.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So we're just reeling that very slowly and making sure that the industry can withstand.
I think we need to get a copy of the Santa Rosa ordinance.
I was going to say you should hike it to 8% because then when we come in at 7, it'll still be a deal.
Do we really want to do that to people?
I'm joking.
I know you aren't.
I think it's smart because, frankly, I don't understand why pot is taxed at a higher rate than
alcohol or cigarettes.
Unless maybe the alcohol and cigarette.
Well, I hate to be pragmatic, but quite simply because it was perceived that it was a lot of money there, and that was the price of doing business, and that's the way that human society works, fortunately or unfortunately. The problem with that is you have to have a realistic assessment. Yeah. I do think the state, instead of helping this turn into a legitimate, healthy market and a controlled market, because we're forgetting, the big benefit here is now when you buy cannabis in Qatari, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
You'll know.
We talk about Qatari a lot.
Yes, we do.
You'll know where it came from. You'll know what portion of THC and CBDs are in it. You'll know. You'll make sure that it's tested to not have any residue from any pesticides or anything else in it. You'll, like we do with every other thing that people ingest, it'll actually have those protections. And that's why we want
maybe more.
Or loss if you have a current administration. Apparently, a lot of food is not.
That's worth paying more than you would get on the black market.
Well, there is a value to it. So to make that transition from the black market, though, we just don't want to kill, it's terrible analogy. Kill the baby, toss the baby out with the bathwater here, and that's the problem of overcharging.
Yeah.
I understand the greed. Hey, the state's smart. They want revenue, but you have to be thought, as you said, look to the future, 20 years ahead.
Exactly. Now, do you have the stats to show what zip codes people are coming
from? That's easy
from.
For us. We have one zip code in Qatari.
Well, I know, but how about 94954, 94952, 94928?
I'm not sure. I suspect we probably can get that data.
It would be interesting to see.
When you go in, you have to show your license. Are they tracking that information?
When you go in, you actually create an account, I understand, with your license. So that's your ID.
Just in case the law flips, they know where to find you.
Exactly.
Yes, President Trump's for life's youth squad will to come and collect everybody.
Well,
Jason, I have to start with
you. Actually, our mayor, our previous mayor, David Glass, his argument against allowing dispensaries in town, and we do, in fairness, we do have some delivery services. I think that
we have one delivery.
We have one, but I think we're allowing up to two or something, but there's only one right now.
And they can only operate during certain hours. And
yeah, but one of the arguments to his credit against against having dispensaries in Petaluma was he was unsure how the Trump administration was going to behave because Sessions was talking about potentially going after states that have laws.
They found out Republicans smoke too.
Yeah, that are in conflict. Well, there's money involved. Anyway, so that was one of his concerns. But I think that concern is gone. I mean, Trump's been pretty. I mean, not that we can trust anything with Trump, but at least on this point, it seems like he hasn't been interested in making any moves to.
We'll probably keep them calm as best we can say this doesn't come from south of the border, President Trump.
Right.
California.
That's true.
So that makes him stop quivering a little bit.
He doesn't really like California.
Well, there's going to be tariffs on Mexican weed anyway.
There you go. There you go.
Right.
Up to 25%. We will be so competitive. That's a great thing. I take that concern, but you know, if you have a concern, we're doing something that's dicey, that there could be a turnout against it. How do we make it safe? How do we, if we want to see that prevail because we think it's a good thing, make it as big as possible.
Yeah.
You know, you flip it up. So support.
Yeah.
Flip it over to Sonoma Clean Power.
Yeah.
We came out of nowhere 8 years ago. We finally started the JPA, the Joint Powers Agreement, that made this happen. Small upstarts, only second CCA, Community Choice Aggregation, delivering clean power in the state. And now, 50% roughly, I think, almost of the power in the state comes from CCAs.
Mm-hmm.
We serve 200,000 homes in Sonoma and Mendocino and about 30,000 businesses, and 87% of the available accounts have stayed and chosen to stay with Sonoma Clean Power. How do we make that successful? The first thing we realize is support other CCAs, support good ones, try and stop anything that's a bad business model, because there were a few of those that popped up.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that increasing size, we have the chance to survive, because what's not seen often by the public and not often covered as much in the news is it has been a fight for survival this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Constant litigation from investor-owned utility interests and now from the CPUC, which is taken a very inimical stand. I think they see us as competition to their hegemony over controlling the future of renewables, and they're doing, in my personal estimation, everything they can legislatively and legally to try and take away our ability to purchase cleaner power and invest locally, and that's a problem. So it's an ongoing fight. So the more of us there are, and our growth helps with us, the better chance we have to prevail.
So what percentage of our power comes from the geysers versus solar and natural gas?
So let's see. Off the top of my head, give me a percentage to or point spread, because this is just going from memory. But I think we see about roughly 47% of our power is renewables. About half of that comes from the geysers. The other two quarters come from the other percentages come from solar and wind, including some local solar right here, two 1-megawatt projects in Petaluma recently. Then the rest of it, roughly another 46-7%, is large hydro, which legally we don't get to call renewable. And I guess there's some concerns, you know, big hydro, when you build it, is environmentally problematic.
Yeah, it is.
But once it's built and delivering, it is a very clean source of power, and it's a great bridge.
Are you talking about dams, hydro?
Yes, large hydro. It's a great source of clean power as a bridge source of power until the future when we have...
The fish are gone.
There's also ways
What I'm trying to say, what's important here is where we need to get to is when we can use clean power only.
Yeah.
But to get there, clean power, solar, wind, only blows and shines certain points of the day. So it's what we call peaky.
I mean, batteries.
So, yeah, Jason, you hit it. That's where we're going eventually, is storage. But till we get there, this is a good thing because it flows pretty steady, except, you know, as long as it rains. And also geothermal. It's one of the more expensive clean fuels, but it goes 24/7. So geothermal and this are great bridges till we get battery technology to the point that we have storage to solve that peaking problem. And when we do, it's a new ball game.
What's happening with the dam, the PG&E dam, that goes into Pillsbury?
I would only have to speculate. I know the water agency, they're bringing all partners together to take a look at this. This is something that...
Oh, is this the one that's in danger of...
Potter Valley, yes. It's,
Potter Valley.
It was put together. I understand literally 100 years ago
right,
or something.
Exactly.
And I guess at the time it has
right.
provided some power of value, but it hasn't in years. But what it does provide is water that serves a lot of interests in
right.
that area.
Right.
And also a lot of water for this county. So I think the direction is just a healthy one it's going from what my understanding. Everybody's sitting down and looking at this and saying, okay, how can we continue to have this water source without impacting downstream fish and
right.
things in Mendocino?
Right.
Because that's been a problem in the past. How can we do this? How can we look at the stakeholders? You benefit from this water. You've had it for free for a century. You're going to have to start paying for this cost.
Yeah.
So all these things are being discussed, and I think we get to a better place, but it's not something I'm involved with or have another water pump deep knowledge of.
I was much more knowledgeable about 25 years ago on it, but it's good to see that it's going in a positive direction. The stakeholders are getting together.
Well, that's
because
the famous last
important.
Words. We'll see where it goes. But
yeah.
it sounds like to me that that everybody's having the discussions they should. Unlike as
right.
we discussed CASA, this is where it should work. You get everybody together in a room and say, okay, bad news for everybody. How do we figure this out? And
yeah.
that's usually when you get your best result.
Yeah. How does the, with climate change groups working together with the clean energy?
Very well. Actually, to give credit, Ann Hancock of the Center for Climate Protection was the driving force
right.
getting this going. Then it was the supervisors, and we'll give the county's board of supervisors here. They were strongly behind this, and the water agency, and a really powerful and fascinating agency that made this happen. But had it not been for Ann Hancock and her group of environmental activists and progressive people who supported this concept and saw, like you said, looking to the future and saying, hey, this could work. That was what made it happen. So as you might well expect, we continue to be in strong contact and work well together because the work's not done.
Right.
Sonoma Clean Power is just the beginning, but getting to a whole new type of grid that makes the right use of this,
right.
that's a political and an environmental and an engineering.
Well, Petaluma just voted in, or they're a climate change
yes.
ordinance.
Right.
And it's interesting because at the Haystack, people were there,
mm-hmm.
and some of these people are not actually part of that group. There seems to be a few different groups on the climate change in Petaluma, but they were at the Haystack talking about climate change. Nobody came to the Deer Creek hearing for housing on the east side, and I find it really interesting where that dividing line is,
mm-hmm.
and people have to realize that, like this community, you know, you have east and a west side. And you can't go and talk about projects and demand things and then look at projects on the east side and be silent on them.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why a climate change resolution is really important, so you have consistency in your community.
Yeah.
And when I talked with, like, Pete Dang about this yesterday, you know, we were having a long conversation about it. It's like a really long process to get from that ordinance to find out, okay, what is the city really doing? What do they want to do? Because I know that they're going to put a committee together. But it's
a dreaded committee.
Three council people.
The first response of any bureaucratic institution.
The easiest way to get rid of something.
Let's make a subcommittee.
Yeah, do a subcommittee and you know it's going to fail.
Actually, I kid a little bit here. That is a good first step in response.
Yeah, but the other's true, too.
And this is the problem. Now, Petaluma is conceived as one of the bigger cities.
Yeah.
You'll remember when there was some jousting back and forth in CASA. Our ABAG representative said that all the larger cities support this. It's just a few of the smaller cities that didn't participate.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, within the week, Santa Rosa, Petaluma, and Rohnert Park, the three largest cities in this county, joined the rest of us at the mayors and council members' legislative committee
right.
in sending a vote of opposition. But Petaluma, being a larger city, where are we going from this? We got sideways back to CASA.
I'm just talking about the importance of actually making sure when a community is doing an ordinance, such as the climate change, that the people that are pushing this realize that this is a bigger community and it's not just about downtown.
Yeah.
It affects everybody, solar everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Transportation, how do you move instead of being caught in traffic? How do you actually flow better?
So despite
how do you make
being
bikes
a bigger city,
move?
You know, which you are, you're one of the big cities here,
yep.
we're still, in terms of having staff people to deal with climate problems, in terms of having money and resources. Mm-hmm. Think of it. Here's the biggest problem probably mankind has ever faced.
Yeah.
Might be the last problem we face. And yet, in terms of the way our economy is structured, what do we actually have to throw at? Cities have nothing, almost, in terms of resources or dedicated people to do this. This is a discussion we're having, and Pete Gang was actually up at our most recent meeting of the Regional Climate Protection Authority, because mm-hmm. we're trying to take a look at how can we make this make more of a difference. And that's right. one of the key ways we're looking to plug in is kind of working together at a larger area,
right.
more cost-effective for everybody. Hey, how can we plug in a staff? What do you need? What can we back you up with? And then where we can find opportunities where multiple cities can perhaps, or multiple areas have the potential to do something that's a large environmental thing, then we can go out and help look for the grants to help make that funding happen.
Well, that's true, too.
Being a big city, it's still hard to do this. So I agree with you. I think that's a good first step.
It is a good first step.
Quick question on clean power. Sonoma Clean Power has been offering various incentives for people to lease or purchase EVs, electric mm-hmm. vehicles. And I see the advertisements sometimes, and it says, you know, better do it before it goes away. Do you think they're going to be moving away soon, or is this something that you see?
I hope you weren't waiting to next summer to do this, Jason.
Yeah.
No. So. Actually, this was always planned to be a limited thing to do.
Yeah.
We went one extra year because it was very popular, and we thought, wait a minute, there's a little more market out there.
Yeah.
And the idea was to jumpstart the use of EVs in this county.
Yeah.
But what we recognized would be a problem, if we do this every single summer, mm-hmm. we get that market. Nobody's buying EVs the rest of the year. Everybody's looking for that.
Yeah, that's a classic thing when you do sales.
Yeah.
if you do too many of them, people won't do anything unless there's a sale.
So we didn't want to kill. So instead of helping the market, we would have been perhaps killing it a little bit that way. So, no, what we're focusing on now is we're trying to help with EVs. We're still providing free chargers, help with charging, and we're really looking at the more intractable problems of, for people that have EVs now, it's how do I charge my car at work?
Yeah.
Or if they live in an apartment complex that was built, you know, more than 5 years ago.
That was the big discussion on the haystack.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
we've got to get that infrastructure.
But nobody at Deer was there to speak on Deer Creek, but the ones that were speaking on Haystack, they were really talking about if you have shared spaces, you know, you have X amount of stations,
right.
but they need to be more high efficiency. Mm-hmm. So people actually have a time frame. Okay, I'm going to be there at 10 a.m. and then somebody else has an 11, mm-hmm. you know, appointment. And so
actually register for the time.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was interesting, but it needs to be consistent.
Yeah. Now, you can see where this needs to go. So those are the types of things we're working on. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe at some point, again, it comes back that it won't be a regular
offer. Well, some of them are still on. When you say it's coming back, I mean,
well, because we actually put, it wasn't just Sonoma Clean Power putting in money. There was the Air Board. There was a few different federal and state grants. It was actually a huge amount of money.
So what you're saying, tax breaks aren't available now that like they were.
Some of them still are.
Yeah, but they're a lot lower.
It's always in flux. It was just a particularly good time because when they were all at once and with Sonoma Clean Power's help, all of a sudden it became, that's a large amount off the top.
Right, right.
So, yeah. So there's still some good incentives. I'm going to take advantage of it because I saw that you can still get chargers. You have to buy them and then you get reimbursed for them.
Yep.
So this is if you want to get like level 2 charging.
It's like a level 2,
house.
Like a 220 versus a
so you have
10,
to, you have to modify. Yeah, right now I charge our EV just
with
the 110.
Yeah,
with 110.
And how long does it take you to charge it overnight, essentially?
It depends on when I go to bed, but when I plug it in. But yeah, it takes some time. But the second level, I think you can do like up to 80% in a couple hours or something like that.
Well,
I think so. That's what they were saying.
I don't know if you quite caught. Yeah. We always have to name any program. Government agencies do. We're calling this Grid Savvy, and your charger will be Grid Savvy, and hopefully you'll join us because what we're doing is we're trying to come up with appliances that use clean electricity from us. And what we want to be able to do is have a way to monitor that usage
mm-hmm.
and through a contractual agreement with you perhaps say, ooh, it's a hot summer. Yeah. We have to cut there's a lot of use of power. Do we turn on a coal fire or gas-powered plant to provide that power, or can we gently turn down your charging just a little bit?
Interesting.
For a short, you know, so say within 10% maybe that charging thing. That's just the short version of it. But if we can do that, we don't need to build more gas-powered plants. We can move to a cleaner economy. So you control demand more than just building more plants.
I just need to make a quick announcement before we're over. This weekend in Santa Rosa High Times Cannabis Cup of NorCal is going to be at the fairgrounds June 1st and 2nd. You can get online. I just got on, High Times Santa Rosa Cannabis, and this site came up. But make sure you get on the correct site, because the other site will take you somewhere where they're trying to sell you something. So there's one fake site. So it'll say how to get tickets, how much tickets. I did this last
night. I think it's $50.
Well, it's $50 or $55 and then $90 for a VIP, and you can get tickets online.
So you're saying don't use the cannabis before you go to these sites.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then the other thing is, if you're a veteran, you can go ahead and ask for a veteran discount online. Then you just show, your card. So I just want to let people know they can buy tickets online, and it's going to be June 1st and 2nd at the fairgrounds.
What
and
is this, tomorrow?
Yeah.
The next day?
Both days.
Yes, both days.
Are you going?
Saturday and Sunday. I'm going Sunday with my daughter.
My weekend's already booked.
Did you score us media passes?
I did not. I'm trying to get media passes, and I just looked at press passes, and I haven't heard anything back. But I'm fine. I'm tenacious. You know that.
I know.
So that's the end of my... I want to make sure people know that High Times this weekend, Santa Rosa Fairgrounds.
All right. Well, I want to thank Mark for being here. It's been a pleasure. As usual, we always run out of time when we have our guests, but it was a good conversation, and we hope to have you back.
It was a pleasure. As I said, I love coming to Petaluma, so always happy to come here, Cindy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You should move and run. Move to Petaluma and run.
Do you know that when we moved to Cotati, we were looking on this side of town. We wanted to stay in Petaluma. It just didn't pencil out, and we found this lovely house in Cotati, and we've been very happy.
So if we have more affordable housing, maybe that would draw you in?
That's probably okay.
Anyway, great having
Mark,
you.
Good seeing you.
Good, thank you all. Good seeing you.
Okay, and I want to remind everybody that we have our website, InsidePetaluma.com. You can go there and listen to any of our past shows. And we have a Facebook page, KPCA Inside Petaluma, where you can go there and like us and follow us there. So, do we have anything else?
No. Have a good weekend.
Have a great weekend.
And I want to remind everybody that there's a Casa Grande High School graduation today. So if you're in your car and you're on that side of town, just steer clear of the high school.
As far as Petaluma High?
Yeah, Petaluma High. So busy weekend, and make sure you
be safe.
Yeah, make sure your kids are safe if they're going to be celebrating.
Exactly.
All right. So everyone, see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Take care.